Hey everyone, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm kicking off today's daily editorials with Eric Wetterling, founder and editor of The Hedgeless Horseman. Now, Eric and I are going to talk about three companies in particular that he is watching, that I've even featured, at least two of the three on the website. We're going to start with a company that's been brought up on the website, but I have not featured them yet. It's SK Mining, traded ESK on the TSX Venture Exchange. ESKYF on the OTC markets. Now, this company is focused in the Golden Triangle. Just by the name SK Mining, they are trying to play off that SK Creek project that is right now held by Skeena Resources. SK Mining has actually released an initial drill hole assay result from their project in the Golden Triangle. They're one of the first ones to have a drill result out from the Golden Triangle, as the labs are very backed up. This drill result came out on September 22nd. It says that SK Mining encounters massive sulfide with assays up to 5.5 grams per ton gold and 507 grams per ton silver in the first drill hole. Now, the stock already ran before this news. It really started to take off in about July and kept on running through all of August. Since that time, stock has moved fairly sideways in a choppy manner. Eric, give us a little rundown on why you like SK Mining, what you're focused on here.
Yeah, sure thing. Well, first of all, I mean, it's located in a legendary district. I mean, as many people probably know, the SK Creek mine was one of the highest grade mines in the world and the highest grade precious metal VMS deposit in the world. And SK Mining basically owns 80% of the SK Creek district. So they own almost all land south of the SK Creek deposit that now belongs to Skeena Resources. And Skeena Resources have basically expanded on the original SK Creek deposit and are up to, I think, around 3 to 4 million ounces of high grade stuff. It's not the original SK Creek grades, but it's like 4 to 5 AU equivalent grams per ton, I think. So that area has been heating up, and Skeena Resources has been doing well. And what I really like about SK Mining is, I mean, first of all, they've gathered one of the best teams. If you are to explore for a VMS system, Thomas Monique, Jan De Decker, and Quinton Henney, and they have Tom Weiss, who is doing the geophysics. He was chief geophysicist at Newmont Mining, and I know Quinton has used him on a bunch of projects with a great success. So, I mean, they have a whooper of a team, basically, and they get a huge land position, like 56,000 hectares, I think. And they've already confirmed several VMS systems south of the SK Creek deposits. I mean, we know there are a bunch of VMS systems there. They have been confirmed by John De Decker, etc., who has reviewed a bunch of core. And currently they are drilling the Jeff TV zone, which has not seen any drilling in 25 years, I think. And they put out, as you said, partial assays from the very first hole and hit, basically a bulk mineable intercept, I would say, 11.24 meters of 4.11 grams per ton AU equivalent. And since then, they have drilled around 15 to 20 holes with two drill rigs. I thought they were going to, close shop perhaps a few weeks ago, but they actually added a second drill rig. So I think that kind of speaks to how excited they are. And in a recent interview, Quinton said that they have basically hit sulfides along a 1.5 kilometer stretch. And according to the geophysics, he believes that the system is probably twice that large. So that would be 3 kilometers in strike length. And the original SK Creek deposit, in contrast, was around 1 kilometer long. So I don't know if I'm not betting that we will have SK Creek grades, but if you have a 3 kilometer long VMS system and the first hole you hit mineralization showed 4.11 grams per ton AU equivalent over 11.24 meters, I mean, that's a pretty good start given that it was the first hole and the footprint looks to be 3 kilometers. And again, I mean, this is just the first of many targets. They're going to probably go back and drill the Ziblulu zone, which is farther to the north, closer to Skeena Resources. And I've heard Skeena Resources talk about doing exploration on their side of the basically the border there, which they're planning on drilling all the way up to ESK Mining's ground in that area. So I mean, that's what I like about SK Mining. That sure, it's a high risk, high reward because it's an exploration play, but I mean, there are already a bunch of confirmed VMS systems, and to have this kind of intercept on the very first hole and to be hitting in the first target over a strike length of 1.5 kilometers and geophysics suggests it's 3 kilometers, I mean, that's pretty good. And again, I mean, you only need to find one good system or deposit to see this become a success, in my opinion.
Okay, fair enough. But, you know, the one thing that is missing, at least right now, is those extraordinarily high grades that we saw at Eskay Creek. So I guess this is a good start. But to your point about adding a second drill, I think a lot of these companies up in the Golden Triangle, because so much money was raised, they wanted to get in these big drill programs. But everything seemed to be a little bit slow to start. And one thing that's also hampering these companies is the fact that the assay labs are so backed up and these companies aren't getting back their drill results. So they can't use them to guide future drilling. But hey, there's still going to be a lot of drill results announced here over the next at least 3 to 6 months. Let's move on to a company that I've had on the show that you've talked about a number of times, Lion One. So Lion One Metals, the company recently released a PEA on the Tuvatu project. That was at the tail end of September. You and I even talked about that. The company also received now over $17 million from warrants that were exercised. Eric, what are you looking for here to drive Lion One in terms of news flow, near-term catalysts?
Well, I mean, if you listen to the recent presentation, I think it was from the John Tomaso's conference where both Quinton and Wally Berikoff presented. I mean, it's so obvious that this is an enormous system. And like Wally basically said, I mean, there are majors that have been kicking their tires, and Newmont, you know, told them, oh, don't build a big plant or whatever, or big for Lion One, because they're just going to tear it down if they actually, you know, if it proves to be as large as they think, and then Newmont or someone else would, you know, acquire them. So that would just be a waste of money. So basically they decided to go with the pilot plant route, basically, because then you know, can get information in terms of recoveries and grade and all that, and you don't have to spend too much money, and they can hopefully become self-funded, and the sunk costs won't be that extreme, and it will be even better in the eyes of an acquirer, since it will be less work to tear down what would have already been built. So I mean, the Line One is still just basically a no-brainer in my opinion, because the PEA backs up the enterprise value, the current enterprise value, and they've already hit, you know, that high-grade feeder. I don't remember the assays, but like, I don't know, 12 meters at 47 grams per ton AU or something. And it was, I think, 130 meters below the deepest intercept, something along those lines. I mean, I would urge people to listen to the presentation, you know, where they talk about what they think the potential is just at Tuvatu. And of course, Tuvatu is just a small footprint of this in this huge caldera, which has a diameter of 7 kilometers. I mean, are they just extremely lucky, or is there a lot more to the story? I think there's a lot more to the story, and I think that's why they brought in 4 drill rigs. Of course, drilling to, you know, the depths they're drilling right now at Tuvatu to hit the high-grade feeder, that obviously takes time, because it's like 800 meters down, I think. But they're planning on to do a ramp, an exploration ramp, to help Basically explore the deeper parts of the Tuvatu system. So yeah, basically I think the margin of safety is there. You get some of the best people in the industry. Wally has sold a bunch of companies for like $500 million to $1.5 billion, and he sounds pretty sure that this is the, you know, the best gold system that he has come across yet. And I think this will be a full-blown success. And if I'm not paying for the exploration upside, that's very good in my book, because I think Line 1 has one of the best exploration upside scenarios of any juniors out there. And the only, I mean, negative thing I really see is, okay, it's in Fiji. It could be in a better place, but I don't think Line 1 will be mining this in 10 to 20 years. I think it will be bought out, and I don't expect anything to happen, you know, geopolitically before that.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. But you know what? I do like some of the prospects of Line 1 when it does come to their exploration and some of those deep holes that they were drilling. But right now, I think the market is still just waiting for more drill results. Seems to be the story with a lot of companies. Line 1 is traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol LIO and on the OTCQX under the symbol LOMLF. Final comment or final stock to talk about here is District Metals. Now, this is a play that I've had on the show a couple times, and they are focused in, well, your area. They are in Sweden. The company is still building up towards actually drilling, which I believe should happen early next year, but they're doing a lot of the surface work, a lot of airborne work to further delineate some targets on this Tom Tebow property. Eric, what are you waiting for when it comes to District Metals, and how are you playing it?
Well, I mean, I just think this one is incredibly cheap. I mean, the previous owners, and this was decades ago, they were actually gonna, you know, planning on bringing this into production, the Tom Tebow mine, and then they decided to focus on forestry instead, and they do this today, and they're called Stora Enso. And I mean, think about that. Decades ago, at whatever metal prices, and they were thinking of bringing Tom Tebow into production, and then they just, you know, switched focus. So fast forward a couple of decades, and District Metals have been able to pick up those assets, and they have more prospects on top of that. There are some to the northeast, I think, and I mean there are multiple zones outlined already, and basically every zone is open in multiple directions, and they have all kinds of metals in the different zones. Some zones are feeder style types with, you know, copper. Some are zinc and silver rich, etc. And I mean, it's tucked between the Garpenberg mine to the south and the Falun mine to the north. And I mean, these types of deposits in this area of Sweden, the Bergslagen area, I mean, they are outstanding. I mean, Garpenberg, for example, is extremely large. I mean, it dwarfs the footprint of what has been delineated at Tom Tebow, for example. I mean, you can fit, I don't know how many Tom Tebows in the Garpenberg. Garpenberg resource. And the thing is that, I mean, this is wide open. Every zone is wide open. They just stopped because they switched focus. I mean, they've done exploration drifts at depth at Tom Tebow, and we're talking maybe 120 meters or something. And that's 120 meters below the, you know, surface workings. And there is like one historic drill hole in between, which hit 4 meters of like 1,000 grams per ton AG equivalent, something like that. So, I mean, there's so much obvious exploration potential, and the valuation is, I think, $30 million US. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's just one of those, you know, they already got the meats and the bones. This was supposed to be a mine already. It's open in all directions. They have a great team. They have Gert Ainsworth from NextGen. They have Doug Ramshaw from Minera Alamos and Great Bear. I mean, tier one people, tier one prospects. It's in a tier one jurisdiction. I mean, COVID, as many people know, we're pretty relaxed about it in Sweden. So I don't see any, you know, delays or anything like that, and they've been out there doing work, obviously, as you said. So I mean, it's just one of these place where it's really cheap, and it's you're not paying for any upside, and the upside is actually, you know, in contrast to many exploration plays, it's very probable here, and it's in a tier one jurisdiction, and many people don't know about Sweden, so I think that's one of the reasons. And base metals are not that hot right now, and we are waiting for, you know, the drills to start turning basically, and they will be drilling very shallow holes. And I'm just, my strategy is that this is just, you know, obviously too cheap right now. Based, I mean, the risk reward is too good, and I don't know what will kickstart it. I just know that someday something will happen that, you know, revalues this higher, because this is one of the biggest no-brainers in terms of risk reward that I've seen.
All right, Eric, wrap us up by letting us know which of these shares that you hold, please.
I own all three companies, and all three are passive banner sponsors of the Hedgeless Horseman.
All right, there we go. I'm going to post a link to your website as well. And hey, Eric, we'll chat again next week. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Corey.